It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm your host, Jason Breifel. Today, I'm joined in the studio by Dr. Ryan Davison, Advocacy Manager of the American Chemistry Society, Jimmy Thomas, Legislative Policy Director at the National Defense Industrial Association, and Mary Kate Cunningham, Senior Manager of Public Policy at ASAE, the American Society of Association Executives, or the Association of Associations. We're all here to talk about the restrictions on federal conference and travel spending that have been put in place following the 2010 GSA, IRS, and other conference scandals, and the effects of those restrictions on both government and on industry. Thank you all for being here today. And before we dive into our conversation, I'd like to remind our viewers that Fed Talk is brought to you by Long-Term Care Partners, the new Fed Talk sponsor for 2015. Long-Term Care Partners administers the Office of Personnel Management-sponsored federal long-term care insurance program. Ryan, Jimmy, and Mary-Kate, thank you all for being here with us this morning. Before we dive in, I'd like you each to just let our listeners know a little bit about your organizations and why this issue, restrictions on federal conference and travel spending, are of importance to your members, your industries, and to the extent that you contain government employees as part of your membership, some specific concerns that they may have. Ryan, do you want to kick us off?
Sure. Thanks, Jason. So I work with the American Chemical Society. We're the world's largest scientific society. I think we right now have approximately 160,000 members. We represent chemists, chemical engineers, and all related fields. In terms of conferences, we have two national meetings a year. We average about 15,000 attendees at each of those meetings. Most recently, we had a meeting in Denver, and about 400 of those attendees self-identified themselves as working in government. That number is actually probably a little low because those are just who reported their profession. So really, we have two issues with limiting travel for federal employees. And one is that the collaborative nature for science and research to advance, limiting the number of federal employees to attend a scientific meeting can really impede scientific progress because by nature, science is so collaborative. Also, the issue of requiring any information to be publicly reported that occurs at a conference, often scientific meetings discuss unpublished data or potentially a patent that people are working on. So that could be counterintuitive to progress also to have to make that public. We understand the spirit of wanting to reduce wasteful government spending. You may not need to send 50 IRS tax attorneys to Maui for a meeting when they could do it other ways. But for science, it's very problematic.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate that. Mary Kate?
Hi. So Mary Kate Cunningham. I'm from the American Society of Association Executives. And we are a membership society that represents individual people that work at trade and professional associations. So we have 22,000 members in 50 states and 50 countries. And we, they're from professional societies, trade associations, and voluntary organizations. And we advocate for associations so that they can continue to fill their missions of improving the quality of life of people in the United States and abroad. And meetings and conferences are really the lifeblood of associations. This is a really important issue for our folks. In every sector, a federal agency needs to hear and learn from experts in the field, and often those experts come together under the umbrella of a trade or professional society. So really, from technology to protect our armed forces, to new cures for deadly diseases, to better building techniques for federal facilities, the knowledge and technology that can help save the government money while creating better public policy is so often found at association conferences. And the restrictions recently have been a huge hit to these conferences, and this is why we care about it.
Great. Thanks, Mary Kate. And we'll definitely talk about the impact of these restrictions later on in the show on the ability of government and industry to come together to tackle these challenges. Jimmy, what about for NDIA? What is your organization? Who do you represent, and why do you guys have a stake in this issue?
Great. Well, thanks, Jason, for having me here. I really appreciate it. Again, it's Jimmy Thomas. I work for the National Defense Industrial Association. We're the largest defense association, nonprofit. We have 1,600 corporate members that range from big defense contractors all the way down to small and mom-and-pop shops throughout the country. We also have about 90,000 individual members. About 25,000 to 30,000 individual members are government military personnel, so it's kind of an interesting dynamic that we have both. And what's important for us in our primary mission is to bring industry representatives to the table with government senior officials and throughout, really, to have a dialogue, to foster that relationship so that the industry can meet the needs of government and that government can also understand the cutting-edge technologies and the other resources that are out there for industry. And what's happened, these restrictions that are in place, not only by the executive but from the legislative body as well, is it restricts government attendance, or it makes it extremely difficult for individuals to attend. And when you don't have half of that relationship participating, it's very difficult for the other half, the industry in this case, to come to the table and have that dialogue. And so for us, it's extremely important that we work through this issue to find a reasonable common ground so that we can continue to have that relationship. Because at the end of the day, if the two can't engage in creative and foster that dialogue, then it becomes an impediment for innovation. And at the end of the day, it's taxpayers and the warfighters that are going to feel the pain.
Great. Well, thank you. And, I think you all highlighted, something that's critical here, which is that engagement between stakeholders on the government side and industry side. But to take us back a step, we have to think about how we got here in the first place, which was a couple federal conferences, which were agency events, particularly those held by the General Services Administration and the IRS in 2010, that after the release of Inspector General reports and a picture of a certain GSA executive in a hot tub in Las Vegas really brought this issue to the forefront and resulted in both legislation and action from members on the Hill, but also from OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, putting out guidance to restrict spending on federal conferences and federal travel. And I think that it's interesting that kind of government-centric events there were definitely some problems that were identified there, but that's also why we have inspectors general. They exist to point out these issues when they arise, and then to hopefully by pointing them out, agencies can make adjustments and change their practices. But the result has been, as we're going to talk about today, the spillover effect into industry, the ability of government and industry to interact with each other. And before we take our first break, we'd just be interested to hear from all of you. When your groups first saw in 2012 kind of the reaction and fallout from these stories hitting the news waves, What was the reaction? I know that the American Chemistry Society put out a letter in the Hill that I found when doing background research on this, kind of highlighting some of the concerns about the inability, cutting back on stakeholder engagement, and it seems like some of those have been borne out.
Well, I can tell you it's a little ironic because the agencies have not been flush with cash for some time, so it's not as if the National Science Foundation or the National Institute of Health or Department of Energy is spending tons of money sending people to conferences. They're tight. The budgets are tight now. So they were already restricting their spending. So this issue, I don't think, affected them much because of the budgets already being so tight. But there's concerns to, actually codify the OMB regulations, because it doesn't appear that there's any real need to do that, because there's no violations of them.
Sure. And for listeners who might not be familiar with the OMB regulations, in 2012, they came out with guidance to agencies that directed a 30% reduction from fiscal year 2010 levels through fiscal year 2016 on all travel spending. There's not a granularity in that travel spending that parses out whether that is travel to go to a conference, travel to go to a training, travel for your USDA employee to go out and service a farmer out in the field in North Dakota. And because of that, we've seen some adjustments to that. And I know that OMB recently made a tweak to that guidance that we'll talk about later in the show after our first break. You are listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue our discussion about federal conference and travel spending after this break and a word from our sponsor.
Make long-term care insurance part of your retirement plan. Long-term care is expensive, and it's not covered by traditional types of insurance plans. With benefits designed specifically for the federal family, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program offers a smart way to help protect savings and assets and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Start planning for the future. Take the next step and visit LTCFEDS.com today. That's LTCFEDS.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, we're featuring a panel of guests representing diverse sectors from defense, science, and associations across the board, as well as government employees, talking about recent restrictions, both from the executive branch and from attempts from the legislative branch, to restrict federal conference and travel spending. We know that the government has been on a tightening belt for the past few years. But as some of our guests have alluded to in our initial portion of the conversation, some of these restrictions might be having some unintended consequences and actually some, perhaps actually adding some costs to the situation. So, I'd like to open up the floor to the guests to just kind of talk about, what has been the effect of these restrictions on your organizations. Have you seen a decline in government attendance or government participation? Are you having trouble dealing with agencies? Interested to hear your reaction from the front lines of how this has affected folks. Jimmy, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's actually been a significant impact that we've seen directly with our meetings. We put on about 90 to 100 events a year, and they range from small business meetings with our industry members all the way up to large conferences with 10 to 15,000 attendees. And what we've seen, though, with these restrictions in place is the attendance has gone down. And if you're an industry person and you want to have or create a relationship with a government entity, or you need better understanding of regulations that are impacting your particular company, and there's an event that's taking place, but those individuals aren't there, well, you're unlikely to attend. And at the end of the day, it's just very problematic, especially when you're trying to foster those relationships to provide better services to the government. So we've seen a direct impact on those attendance levels, yeah.
Great. Well, I remember hearing a particular story about an international event that I think was looking at kind of space technologies and defense in space, and we weren't able to send anybody from the Air Force or NASA or any of the other agencies that you would have hoped to have been there to that event. And I remember reading the media reports that said it was really a shame, because the U.S. often is a leader in these events, and our absence there kind of made the events have less of an impact, because a major player wasn't at the table.
And I also real quick want to point out that a lot of the restrictions that were put in place are very kind of arbitrary as far as the numbers or what meetings people can attend. But it's also important to point out that those two instances, which had a lot of spotlight shown on them, were government-sponsored. They were planned and executed by the government entity itself. And there are plenty of organizations out there, such as NDIA, that we're nonprofit and we do this professionally. This is our job is to put these events on. They are high caliber and with a great reputation. So I think there's a level of education that needs to take place with on part of the federal agencies as well as members of Congress to really understand that not all these meetings and conferences are created equal in that sense.
Great, thanks. Mary Kate?
Yeah, I think what's really interesting from the legislative side is that right after this happened, it came out in the news in 2012, there was, within 24 hours, really, the House and the Senate had passed language that they added on to other pieces of legislation. And that language included a ban once someone from a federal agency went off campus to meet with an outside group, for the rest of that fiscal year, no one else from that agency could go meet with that outside group. So sometimes we hear that, you know, the legislation from Congress won't actually really pass on this, but it really, we have to remind people that it really has. And luckily, those were two separate pieces, so they weren't conferenced or signed by the president. But we're constantly concerned about the issue getting a lot worse with further regulation. And it's also, we've discussed a little bit, it's the cost of regulation is difficult. It's agencies are spending a lot of money to implement this. In the case of NIH, it's a quarter of their conference budget. So that is more than they spend on researching Hodgkin's disease. So it's created another piece of bureaucracy with the good intentions of creating transparency. So we think there are ways to fix this and kind of make the situation better for everyone.
Yes, to support what Mary Kate said, I think we need to encourage collaboration. The Department of Energy has reduced spending on travel, training, and conferences by 30% since 2012. And specifically with science, it's so important to encourage scientists to meet in person. You just can't replicate that over a telephone call or Skyping. There's already so many obstacles to innovation and science and research. To add another one just doesn't really make sense to the scientific community, and hopefully to the larger community.
Yeah. One, you know, I think, Mary Kate, you raised an interesting point, which is, you know, in the quest to scale back the bureaucracy or rein in perhaps wasteful spending, we're actually seeing the unintended consequences of, you know, new bureaucracies that have been put in place at agencies to track this kind of spending. You know, we have agencies spending significant portions of their budget just monitoring requests to go on meetings, to head out into the field, and at a time when we do have tight budgets, it seems like that effort might be spent on the you know, rather than sending folks out to an event where they can engage with folks, we're more concerned about making sure that we're tracking every single dollar. And just didn't know if any of you wanted to weigh in on that and how it's tied in with how your groups have addressed this issue or how it's affected your members who might be inside the government.
So there's the GAO has kind of came out with a report in March to highlight some of the concerns for the science and defense community, especially. And so what's interesting is now, in one example, Los Alamos National Lab spent more than $700,000 to create a system that would help approve conferences. And I think that the Army has done a similar thing with a tracking tool. So there's been a ton of money spent trying to go through the bureaucracy and streamline the process, and it's frustrating because it's not helping the situation at this point.
And that's actually a really good point, because there's so many instances of this. You know, GAO has really done a great job at looking at this issue. And another instance with the Naval Research Lab, they found that they spent over 9,000 hours just on oversight-related activities, costing upwards of $850,000. And that's just to review the material. That's not an actual product or service that the government was acquiring. And that's not even taking into account the high-level review that was taking place of the same material that they spent 9,000 hours reviewing. So there's a lot of that waste. And going back to the other point that we talked about, it's appropriate to provide oversight on these issues and to be good stewards of government and taxpayer money. But at the same time, it has to be done in a reasonable way that actually doesn't restrict or hamper innovation and collaboration. And when you're spending $850,000 and 9,000 man hours to just review things, that money could have been spent better.
And what we've seen is that there's actually been federal travel spending has been reduced by $3 billion compared with FY10 levels. So the OMB regulations are very much working, and we think even the pendulum has swung too far. But to kind of review the regulations, the agencies are now can only spend 70% of FY10 levels, and they have to keep those reduced budgets in place to FY16. There's also a series of reporting requirements, and I think we've seen that they've worked extremely well. We have it back to Ryan's point about how there haven't been these issues in the press anymore, and the IG's office has spent a lot of time researching it to make sure.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that I think is really interesting about this, earlier this year, the Association of Government Accountants, whose members include inspectors general who are on kind of the audit side of things, put out a report on kind of top concerns of that group. And they found that the push in Congress to legislate oversight through the IGs has produced some of these negative consequences for their own offices. They said in that report, you know, our job is to find the wasteful spending, bad practices, and in areas that could be improved. You know, we don't need Congress to tell us to look at conference and travel spending across the board at every single agency. We don't need them to tell us to look at government charge card use at every agency. Sure, there are problems at specific agencies and certain instances with these issues, but mandating us to spend IG time on these issues when that might not actually be a problem at a particular agency, you know, is creating a burden on the IGs themselves that is a burden in addition to the staff time that agency employees are already spending themselves on these issues and conducting the oversight and the reviews.
Right. This is a good political talking point to say, well, we've saved all this money, but we're not convinced the problem actually exists even. So.
Yeah, it's hard to quantify the cost of not having scientists meet and the research that comes out of those conferences, and the same in the defense community. There are unintended costs to this as well, and it's very concerning for a host of industries.
And to that point, it's really easy to look at budget sheets and to look at numbers and to see where things are going. But what we're starting to see now, and you see that in articles being written in the Post and elsewhere, are the certifications and the credentials that engineers and scientists need to have to stay in their position. And they're not getting that because they can't go to a meeting, or they have to go to a series of things online that actually require more money, more registration fees than just going to one conference. And in fact, the Office of Federal Procurement Policy established that the attending conferences was the best venue for contracting officials in industry to legally and ethically interact. I mean, that's just a fact that when you can do business in front of other individuals and have that conversation, that dialogue, that you're really actually getting a better bang for your buck. And unfortunately, those are the other unintended consequences because we're so focused on just numbers.
Yeah. And even sometimes in the GAO report highlighted that DOD and DOE officials now have a length of time to review and approve conferences that went from a period of weeks to now as much as 9 months. And the impact of that is also that if you have a last minute notice and that you can go to a conference, you're spending last minute flight prices and hotel fees. So there are a lot of costs to this issue that are longer than a cable news soundbite.
You know, I think that's a great point, and we'll kind of unpack some of these issues a little bit more after our next break and a word from our sponsor. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Are you a federal or U.S. Postal Service employee or annuitant, or an active or retired member of the uniformed services? If so, you're eligible to apply for coverage under the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program. The program offers a smart way to help protect savings and assets and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Make long-term care insurance part of your retirement plan. Find out how at LTCFEDS.com. That's LTCFEDS.com.
If you're a federal manager, you deal with a lot of information. Here's a tip on breaking through the noise. Join the Federal Managers Association to have a voice on Capitol Hill. And to get filtered news and information specific to managing your workforce, join the 50,000 other federal managers who already subscribe and read the free weekly e-report, FedManager.com. I'm Todd Wells, Executive Director of the Federal Managers Association, and I approve this message.
Welcome back. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm joined this morning by Mary Kate Cunningham from the Association of Associations, Jimmy Thomas from the National Defense Industrial Association, and Dr. Ryan Davison from the American Chemistry Society. We are talking this morning about the restrictions on federal conference and travel spending and the effects of those on both the government and industry. Before the break, we were talking about an issue that I thought was fairly interesting on how the effect of some of these restrictions on the ability of both government employees, but also folks from industry to maintain professional certifications, to engage with their counterparts out in the field and exchange information. And, you know, I think, Ryan, I'd like you to kind of pick up on that issue and talk about some of the concerns from the scientific community and what that means.
Thanks. So what we're trying to do really is educate lawmakers and their staff about how the spirit of reducing wasteful government spending is important, but how negatively it affects the scientific community. And the Oversight Committee has been looking into this, and we were fortunate enough to have, for a long time, a true champion of science in Congress, Congressman Rush Holt, who is now the head of the AAAS. And they had a hearing in 2012, and Congressman Holt, as an accomplished physicist, was able to explain firsthand the importance of collaborative science to the members of the Oversight Committee. And with his absence now, we're concerned just about educating members of Congress and their staff about how, of course, wasteful government spending is bad, but it's very negative in terms of the collaborative nature of science. So that's what we're doing right now.
Great. And I think, you know, you raise an interesting point. As two former Hill staffers, Mary Kate and Jimmy, we were talking on the break about how sometimes staffers and members are looking through budgets when they're trying to find, you know, where to invest the government's dollars. And sometimes you just read the title of a certain line item and say, maybe we don't need that, but you don't fully understand what's underneath of that line item. And didn't know if you could explain that process or kind of some of the thinking there. And now that you're on the other side, you know, how do you go about explaining that kind of information to lawmakers? And like Ryan said, this is really an educational effort to push us past the kind of political talking point that Mary Kate brought up.
I think that's it's an interesting dynamic, because education really is critical to this piece. And unfortunately, especially leading up to the incidents with the two federal agencies, there wasn't much understanding of conference policy and how agencies went about hosting or just attending things. And so you have this blow up, and things move very quickly on the Hill. And sometimes it's guided by what's in the news. And so it's easy for staffers and members to look at this, and rightfully so. It's a problem, and it was definitely an abuse of the system. But what happens is, you, without understanding the complexities of the issue, it's easy to go look at numbers and just say slash, just like OMB coming out and saying reduce travel costs by 30%. Well, why 30%? How does that actually fix the problem? Then compound that with sequestration, and that becomes very problematic. So it's really important for our associations and groups to really engage with members and the staff to let them understand, you know, what it is, not only about the issue, but what services we provide and how it actually impacts industry, how it impacts federal workers. And that's something that NEIA, we've been doing the last several years, is really trying to engage with them on that issue and trying to relieve some of these burdensome kind of regulations. But it is one of those difficult things when you're a staffer and you're trying to address an issue. It's very easy to just look at numbers that are on the page because that's what's in front of you. And again, that's why it's important for us to kind of go up there and show them the other side of the issue.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think the three of us are on the Hill a lot talking about this. And once you have that conversation with the staffer and you explain the way that this regulation is really working, I think there's kind of a moment of revelation a lot of times, because our concern is that our members are having an increased difficult time interacting with federal officials. And in many cases, the regulators now aren't able to speak to the people that they're regulating. And a lot of this happens at association conferences. Our folks are able to say, this is how this is working on the ground, and these are the problems that we have with it. So now I don't think anyone is interested in increasingly isolating the federal government from those that are they're regulating. And our other concern is that associations are the leading sponsor of adult education and continuing education. And many federal employees are having difficulty maintaining their accreditations and their licenses that they really need. So from emergency responders to CPAs, this is a big issue for us. And I think Hill offices very much get that. And so often conferences and meetings take place around the country. They're not just the tourist spots. They really take place around the country. And it's good to remind folks about the economic impact of those conferences.
You know, you raised the issue of you know, tourist destinations, or you know, kind of hotbeds of that host these events, such as Las Vegas. You know, we saw,
maybe not do that again.
well, you know, it's interesting. We did you know, immediately following the kind of the GSA scandal. You know, there was legislation floated in Congress that would bar agencies from sending their employees to that city. You know, I know that there's been other talks about flagging certain cities that host a lot of these kinds of events because they're viewed as fun, great places to go. But oftentimes folks don't see the flip side of that, which is because these cities are so good at or have so much space and property and venues to host these events, oftentimes they are the best value to send people to, because the costs are lower, they have the capacity. And Mary-Kate, you probably can unpack that one a little bit more for our listeners.
Yeah, for many of our associations, Las Vegas is the only place in the country they can hold their conference because they have so many thousands of members come in. It's a lot of times for Orlando, it's the same. And it actually saves the government money in so many cases because there are extremely low room rates in a lot of these cities. And once you're there, everything's in a close proximity. So Senator Heller has introduced amendments to a lot of this legislation saying don't blacklist any tourist locations, perceived tourist locations, because there are so many positives. Again, it's just it's not a talking point. There's more thought behind this issue.
A lot of times it comes down to the capacity to host, but also the audiovisual equipment, the quality of the experience, being able to actually facilitate the conversation and the dialogue that you're trying to have. The Washington Post highlighted this earlier in the year with an article where a federal employee was trying to send employees out to a conference, and it was, I can't remember what city, but it had a casino in it, and so they weren't able to go just because there was a casino there. So they wound up having to go up the road to a smaller venue that didn't have the quality of equipment. So the attendees went to a lesser quality event just because there was a casino that has actually nothing to do with federal spending, but it was just the visual, right? And that's kind of one of the issues that we have to get around, is understanding what is a real issue and what's not a real issue.
Absolutely. And you know, I think in today's environment, it really can be very difficult for folks to distinguish fact from reality or a talking point from what's really happening on the ground, especially when oftentimes the general public is only hearing those little sound bites that are coming through about lavish conference in Las Vegas. Let's make sure that no feds go there. Let's make sure that we don't have any meetings there in the future. Part of the argument against that has been, why don't we just take all of these meetings digitally or take them to the internet? What's the response from your groups to that response?
So actually, I could give you a personal anecdote that might be more revealing than I'd like, but I was in graduate school studying neuroscience for longer than I should have been. And in these conferences were a great opportunity to stand in front of your research, and more senior, knowledgeable scientists would come talk to you, and oftentimes you'd gain insights that you would have never picked up unless you had personal one-on-one communication with someone senior in the field, and that you just cannot replicate that in any other way but personal one-on-one communication. They give our scientists and researchers give talks where you can speak to a room of 100 people or so and bounce ideas off sometimes unpublished scientific data, which you want to know if you're going in the right direction with your research, or even in terms of a new innovation that has not been patented. So that's why I mentioned at the beginning of this, the transparency issue. Of course, we understand the spirit of it is to, so people, taxpayers know where the money's being spent in these conferences, but for science and innovation, there could be some serious problems with that requirement.
Congressman Rush Holt used to point to a list of cancer drugs that were created, and they were research that was started when people talked in person at a scientific conference. And it led from there. It's really, there's a place for teleconferencing, but it cannot replace the actual interaction between people. And I would also note there's in a lot of legislation and what's currently active in the House, there's you have to do a cost-benefit analysis between a teleconferencing and an in-person. And it's not clear how you do that. And OMB doesn't know how to do that. So that's another something to flag with issue with this regulation.
And the scientific community is a big part of this, but also in the DoD side with acquisition and market research. That's another big piece of where you have to be able to go out and look at products and to understand what that innovative technology is, what that platform is, whether it's a cyber, whether it's an aircraft or anything else. And it increases competition as well when you have other companies coming together and seeing what's out there. But it's the best place for one government person to go to a location and to really look at a broad spectrum of technology and innovation that's out there to conduct the proper research. That's just like when you go buy a car, you don't just go and look at one car one day and then, you go to the lot and you look at everything at one time and you test drive what you want. And it's the same kind of way when it comes to acquiring major technologies.
Absolutely. And I think part of what might get lost in all of this is the significant impact that federal investment in research, both that is produced by federal employees, but also research that's going on in the private sector. And I'm interested to the extent that some of this, these restrictions might be impacting negatively that engagement of pushing forward new ideas, new industries, new products that would have a positive economic impact on our society. We talk about doing a cost-benefit analysis for whether you should teleconference or go to that meeting, but it seems in the bigger picture for this issue, we're not necessarily thinking about that cost-benefit analysis of, well, what if we do invent the drug that's going to cure cancer? What is the economic benefit to our society of that? And if we're cutting off the ability to have these interactions between government and industry and other stakeholders, what are the true costs there? And it doesn't seem like we're really fully capturing that as part of this debate, because we're only looking at the near-term front-side cost.
There was an interesting thing that came up the other day. The private sector spends more money on innovation and research, both in the United States and throughout the world, than the government does. And when you restrict this dialogue and this collaboration, what you're actually doing is you're restricting government from taking advantage of the innovation that's already taking place in the private sector. And it's extremely important that government officials have access to that, whether it's through meetings or conferences. They need to be able to get out there and talk and have that dialogue.
I think one point that GAO and agencies have brought up is that we're losing our scientific edge as a country, because if we can't get American scientists from the government to present, foreign scientists have been filling the void. And I think that's a huge problem.
Ryan, do you want to
weigh
in on that?
Yeah, I don't even want to start on this issue. any new obstacles to science and research? It's already so challenging to be a successful researcher in the United States right now. It just makes no sense. We're getting beaten badly by other countries understanding the need to invest in research and innovation.
Does that message have any traction up on the Hill? Do they say, yeah, we get it, but we got to worry about the dollars we're spending right now?
Of course, no one would publicly say they're against science or research, but often you could ask to rank, you know, your top 5 or 10 priorities, and it's not in the top few on a member of Congress' list. Everyone is for curing diseases and we want the new Google or the new Amazon to happen within the U.S. borders. But again, this just seems like an unnecessary obstacle from the scientific community.
Sure, great. Well, we'll pick that up and take this back to the broader context of what's going on the Hill, what's going on with OMB related to this issue in our last segment after our last break, and a word from our sponsor. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Make long-term care insurance part of your retirement plan. Long-term care is expensive, and it's not covered by traditional types of insurance plans. With benefits designed specifically for the federal family, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program offers a smart way to help protect savings and assets and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Start planning for the future. Take the next step and visit LTCFEDS.com today. That's LTCFEDS.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're entering the last segment of our show where we're talking about the effects of federal conference and travel restrictions with a panel of guests representing the scientific, defense, and associations community. Before the break, we left off kind of talking about where the situation is with regards to these issues up on Capitol Hill, as well as within the administration in terms of guidance coming out of the Office of Management and Budget. Where is this issue on the Hill right now? Is Congress still trying to legislate on this issue, or are we still trying to codify into law those OMB restrictions that were due to sunset after fiscal year 2016? Where are we at right now, and what are your groups and other groups who are concerned about these issues doing about that?
I think so. Right now, active in the House is the GSA Act of 2015. It was introduced by Blake Fahrenthold from Texas. It's the same bill that had passed unanimously last Congress by voice vote, and it was introduced right after this became a big issue in the news in 2012. And our argument now is that we're really in a different climate than last Congress. We've seen the GAO work, a lot of reports in the news about the major negative impacts of this legislation. So we have had a lot of conversations with offices on the Hill about this, and I think there's some understanding now that the pendulum has swung too far. And in the Senate, the bill has not been introduced again yet, but we're hearing rumblings that it may be, so we're watching it closely. All of our offices are.
Yeah, and I think going along with Mary Kate saying, there definitely seems to be some better understanding of these issues. You'll see individuals, no matter what, just want to clamp down. It's that nice talking point that they can take back to their district or state. But there really is some positive engagement that we're having with members and staff, and as well those in the executive. In fact, that you had the Undersecretary for AT&L and DOD, Frank Kendall, issue a memo to his staff, basically telling them to be mindful of being good stewards of taxpayer dollars, but to also push people to attend these meetings, especially scientists and engineers, because it's very important for them. But also in the House passed defense bill that passed last month, you have report language from the committee where they're concerned about the attendance levels at these conferences. They echo the statements of Secretary Kendall, and they actually asked for DOD, the Secretary of Defense, to look at the conference policies and their impact on the department and to actually report back to the committee at the end of this fiscal year. So there are some positive steps being taken, both in the Hill as well as in the executive, that we're trying to harness and continue to move that dialogue forward.
Yeah, I think we're optimistic with our educational outreach efforts on the issue right now and are getting a lot of receptive feedback after we meet with staff and explain, again, no one wants wasteful government spending, but by codifying regulations that don't look to even be violated, it doesn't really help any of the communities we represent here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think every conversation we have had on the Hill has been productive recently. It just takes a lot of groundwork. And when this issue first came in the news, ASAE had a sign-on letter with 2,100 organizations from all 50 states. So there is a big coalition of groups that really care about it and are willing to make their voice heard.
That's great. And, you know, I'm glad to hear that there's some traction on this issue in a different capacity. I also represent a couple federal employee groups, and we're hearing largely the same, that folks are starting to better understand some of the unintended consequences. But at the same time, you know, folks do want to be able to tell their constituents back at home that they're doing something about this. I think it is a positive sign that at least at this point there's not companion legislation in the Senate on this, because they might be looking at that. Is this an issue that we think will be put to bed with this Congress, or are we going to have to continue this fight into the future?
I think our concern is that this issue could always get added to a piece of must-pass legislation. We're probably going to have a CR, the debt ceiling's coming up again. And this happened in 2013, and it could happen again. So it's something, it's hard to pass, it's hard to stop something like that. So that is our concern.
Yeah, absolutely. We're always looking for that must-pass bill and kind of the amendments that are going to come up. And we look at the same cast of characters to see kind of what they're doing. But we try and build relationships with them as well. It's very much, I don't think this issue will ever be put to rest kind of in the environment that we're in. There's a lot of groups out there looking just for these kind of activities. And even if they still happen, it's probably... it actually is. It's more so of the lack of understanding of the regulations and oversight than it is some kind of nefarious act or to just bypass the rules. And so there always will be something. And I think, it's just about educating those members to understand that adding more restrictions on is not necessarily the answer. In fact, the Navy last year, to kind of get around some of this conference troubles, they actually kind of outsourced the conferencing piece, so to say. They went out and did contracts, and they went through the GSA schedule, and they found entities because they realized that they were doubling their effort to provide this service. So they went out and they had a contract. And so that's a really positive note, especially for organizations like ours, that it's what we do, and we do it in a way that both services the needs of the government and industry. So, again, there's still always positive notes to all this.
I think also one thing to note is what we're hearing from the Hill. They're saying we didn't intend for the federal agencies to go even further back. And it's really a lot of times on the federal agencies. They're not reaching the levels of spending they have available. There's so much fear of sending someone to a conference that ends up on the cover of the Washington Post. And that isn't Congress's fault. It really is on everyone to know about the issue. And I think we would like to work with OMB in the future to kind of look at the current memo they have and see how we can make changes to it.
You know, I think that's a good point. That folks inside the government are worried about being that next front page story of the Washington Post, because You know, it can be a career ender or even worse, just ruin your reputation for life, whether you deserve it or not. And I think it's really an interesting part of what I'm seeing in other aspects of the work that I do for my federal employee groups, that, you know, we want government to be innovative and taking risks and trying to change up their business practices. But sometimes when they do that, they're putting themselves out on a limb that might be, you know, draw some attention, warranted or not. And, you know, Jimmy, you bring up that some agencies are looking to say, well, maybe we should just get out of this business altogether and let outside groups do that. I don't know enough about it to say whether that is a practice that should be expanded across the government or not. You know, maybe for events that it is a mix of government and industry attendees, that makes more sense. But if it's going to be purely government attended, maybe not. Although those were some of the events that started this all in the first place. And maybe that's a conversation that can be fleshed out up on the Hill or in OMB.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think to that point, when you look at those conferences with GSA and IRS, the accountability piece is the most important. And it's really easy to hold an outside entity much more accountable because you just don't do business with them anymore. And there are blacklists and things like that companies get on. But it's just, a better way. The government's not in the business of putting conferences on. They've shown that in some cases, unfortunately, that they're not responsible enough to do that. But there are associations and organizations, nonprofits, and there are for-profits that is their job. And I think it would be a much more efficient use of taxpayer dollars to contract and put proposals out there like they do with anything else with the government or services, and allow groups like ours to bid on those and then they would hold us accountable by, you know, it's important for us to continue to do business for the government.
Great. Well, we're heading into our last few minutes of the show here. Are there any last words that folks would like to provide for our listeners? You know, places that they can go to see what your organizations are up to, what actions they might be able to take on their own accord?
Sure. I think we've covered the issues pretty well, but I'll make a plug for the American Chemical Society. We have a legislative action network, and I'd encourage people to go to our website and find where that is and sign up for it. When there's an issue relevant to scientists or researchers, we send emails out to the people on that list.
And what's that website?
ACS.org, I believe. Just Google American Chemical Society.
All right, perfect.
Does anyone actually type in websites?
It is ACS.org.
Okay.
Yeah. I would add the power of A is ASA's kind of industry advocacy campaign about how associations are making a better world. And we cover a lot of this on our website and under our news section. We have a lot of our sign-on letters and what is happening on the Hill.
And I would just say from NDIA's perspective, if people are interested in letting their lawmakers know about these issues and to show some opposition or concern about measures that are being taken. But for those that are in the federal government and industry, to know that it's okay to go to conferences and to travel, and they shouldn't shy away from doing these things that are professionally good for themselves, but as well as the government.
Great. Well, I'd like to thank our guests again, Mary Kate Cunningham from ASAE, Jimmy Thomas from NDIA, and Dr. Ryan Davison from ACS. Thank you all for being here with us today. I appreciate the conversation, and hope our listeners have a great rest of the Friday and a great weekend. Thanks, everybody.